ear, piece on your ear. Take your iPod, your iPad with your HD display. Connect them to the cloud so your data's up to date. With your tablet in the air, play some solid game. Log into Facebook, tag a photo you can share. Tweet your plans, and play some Angry Birds now. Come on, baby, tell me who's the nerd. Nerd up. Everybody say, grab your GPS and get up on your Segway. Nerd up. It's a way of the world. No matter where you are, you got a 4G signal.
It's time for the Nerd Up Podcast, and here's your pod hosts, Guilty Wilson. Nerd
Up. All right, welcome to another episode of the Nerd Up Podcast. I'm Guilty Wilson.
I'm Eric Billingsley.
I'm Tim Coker.
I'm Brett Ashley Dutton.
Someone's voice changed. And name, I guess. No, actually, we got us a new pod host on here. And Eric, you're the one that brought Brett into this mess. Explain to her why you did this. Why you messed up her life like this?
Well, we've been discussing how we need a female perspective, and we need a voice of female nerddom, because there's a lot of them out there, and we've been talking about this, tossing it back and forth. And I know Brett from, we work at the same place, and we would frequently talk about all kinds of nerdy things, specifically Marvel comics and the Marvel movies and Game of Thrones, of which we're both diehard fans, whereas she's read all the books. I have not, but It is on the list of to do one of these days.
You know, I think that makes her smarter than you then.
She probably is.
I don't know about that. Well, I just have a lot of free time.
That helps when you're a nerd to have free time. So what brought you into the nerd world, Brett? What makes you such a nerdy person?
When I was about 4 years old, I was 4 years old in 92, and the original X-Men cartoons came on. And my dad, he would make us watch them on Saturdays because he grew up on Marvel. And so I was raised on X-Men. And then I lived in a household where our treats, our rewards would be our parents would buy us books. So you just kind of grow from there. And next thing I know, I'm hearing about Robert Jordan and, you know, Lord of the Rings, and finding myself in the sci-fi and fantasy section and watching the Sci-Fi Channel on a Saturday night at home in high school.
Oh, yeah.
It evolves, I guess.
So, see, guys, it's not just us. It affects the women, too, this nerd syndrome.
Does.
Here's one thing I kind of expected to happen during this podcast whenever we introduced a female perspective, was I thought the rest of us guys were just going to sit in the corner and giggle all night, but apparently not. We're good to talk with you.
Well, I'm glad to hear that. I'm glad that you could pull your big boy pants up for the sake of, you know, nerd talk.
All right, well, you're going to be...
I think it helps that I can probably school a couple of you on a few subjects.
And with attitude. A nerd with attitude is the best in the world.
It's only way we'll learn.
When you're nerdy enough, you have that confidence, you can get an attitude.
True.
Yeah.
Well, welcome to the podcast, and hopefully you get to make it on a whole bunch more. Again, one of the big things we always have going is everybody's schedule never seems to really fit in exactly. See what we can do about fitting you in more often. So let's
Definitely.
Get on.
Thanks for having me.
Well, let's get on with the podcast. We got some fun, nerdy things to talk about now. However, I will warn all you listeners out there, we're not all caught up on everything because we do lead those busy lives, and we're not caught up on all the latest episodes, but I do want to talk about some television, some stuff that's going on through the seasons, and which I'm happy about on some of them. I'll probably throw out a few shows that I might be the only one talking about them, but if so, just sit back and relax and enjoy. But first of all, we're going to start talking about some of the comic book TV series. We're going to start talking about Marvel's Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., one of the best TV shows out there right now. During the pre-podcast, we talked with Brett, and she's not caught up on that. But
I was scared that it might like ruin, you know what I mean? Because without the budget of the movies, I was scared what it would do.
Now, I will warn you when you do get caught up, because I know you will now that you're listening to us. But I will warn you that the first season kind of starts out a little slow and it's kind of hokey in part. But once you get to the point where the Captain America movie came out during the series, that's when things just exploded and it became one awesome bunch of Marvel. Latest season has gone on all right, I guess. In fact, I want to get Tim Coker's opinion, especially on this one. What do you think of the second season of Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D.?
You know, I've actually been loving this season. I thought that last week's episode, where they go to the big gala deal and try to steal the painting, had to be one of the two or three best episodes of the show. It was just phenomenal. Everything about it was great. It was very funny because I've suffered through the first season. I'll say it, you know, as somebody who, like, I'm enough of a Marvel zombie that I would watch this regardless. I can't in good conscience really recommend the first half of the season, although there are a handful of good episodes. But when it hits its stride, it becomes so good. And at this point, I am pretty close to as invested in this cast of characters as I was to the gang from Buffy the Vampire Slayer, which is pretty high praise for me. I mean, I shouldn't say that because Buffy is Buffy, right? But it gets into that zone and it feels really good. And I think that they're really working that. Last week, the characterization of May especially was fantastic. Like all of them, all the characters have so evolved and continue to surprise me. So I love it. And this week's episode, I felt like was kind of more of a setup for the next big thing that's going to happen. Although Kyle MacLachlan, phenomenal casting.
Right?
Who here in the room is up to date with Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D.?
I'm not.
I shouldn't say much. But Kyle MacLachlan's last scene in the episode will banish any doubts for anybody that he is a bad choice for the big bad in this, because he's fantastic. He's crazy, unpredictable, and funny in this scene. And if you don't like it, your heart is made of stone.
Well, I'm a huge Kyle MacLachlan fan. Ever since Dune, I've just been addicted to Kyle MacLachlan and anything he's done, even the bad stuff. And when I saw that he was going to be in this season, I was just like, oh, that's going to be even cooler.
So
I'm glad to hear that that's a good thing. I haven't seen that episode yet where he's even made an appearance, I don't think. So
who's he playing?
Well, I can't really say, but he's not anybody from the comics.
All right, I was just wondering.
Yeah, as far as I know, they haven't given him a name, I don't think. But he's really having a lot of fun with the part, but not in the way that you see when famous people do superhero things sometimes and they act like it's fun to play dress up. You know, like I'm thinking of Jada Pinkett on Gotham. Oh, I shouldn't say that. But
that's
she's
so
just
bad.
Like several degrees so up over the top. You know, hey, all right.
Yeah.
Marvel, respect. So anyway, I shouldn't rag on her, but what she's doing is watchable, but it's weird.
No.
We'll get to Gotham. All right. But he's really going for it. And really, you know, just tearing big bloody hunks off of this part, you know, like really savoring it. But it never feels like he's kind of condescending to the material. It seems like he's really in it. I like it.
Oh, that's definitely good to hear. I think look at his Blue Velvet, Twin Peaks even, and of course Dune. He's played these comic booky characters, you know. It's not the norm, so I think he's used to it. And that's like, whenever I heard he was going to be on here, I thought, well, I bet he could pull that off. And I didn't want to say anything until I saw it for sure. So, but good to hear that he's doing it.
Yeah, he's a very quirky type of actor.
Yeah.
He's not a straight man. He's not a leading man, at least not in a traditional sense. So it's good to see that casting directors know how to use him and let him play to his strengths.
Well, like even in Believe, when his role in Believe, it was still quirky, and it worked really well for him in that.
Yeah. Well, now I am two episodes behind, but I have to talk about the last episode I saw, which I thought was positively brilliant, and that was the one where Simmons is undercover, which when we had seen the preview the week before, and you know, you see her pointing a gun at Coulson, and they're implying that she's gone over to Hydra. I was like, there's no freaking way that Simmons, of all people, is going to defect to Hydra. I was like, I knew as soon as I saw that, okay, she's doing the double agent thing. And sure enough, that's exactly what she was doing.
Right.
But I really loved that episode. I loved the interaction between her and Coulson. They brought back a character from earlier in season one that was kind of surprising. I didn't think that we'd see him again. And I think we're probably going to see a lot of those types of callbacks that, you know, because it was mid-season one when we saw this character last. So it's been a lot of episodes, you know, and I admire the fact that they're willing to go that far back and pick up threads of a story that you may have thought were dead in the water. And of course, every time I see, you know, Fitz, my heart just breaks for that poor guy. Hopefully he and Simmons will be reunited soon, but at least he's made a new friend with that really, really tall guy, and he seems to be able to interact with Fitz like no one else can. So, but I really did like that episode. It's one of my favorites that I've seen so far, honestly.
I think you and I are in the same place and watching. I'm two episodes behind because that's the last one I watched as well, and I like that secondary character, the new friend of Fitz, the new FOF.
Yeah, I don't know his name.
Yeah, but I think they're going to turn something into that. I don't know what yet, but it just seems like all of it too convenient that he's got a friend like that that can understand him like that. It's like, I bet there's going to be some fun in that one. But
and of course, we speculated last season about the fate of Ward and what they were going to do with Ward. And I've been talking about this with other people that watch the show. And the general consensus, I think, is that at some point, it may take some time down the road, but eventually I think that they are going to integrate Ward back into the team, even in spite of the number of people that he's killed and the things mm-hmm. that he's done. They're already setting precedents for bringing people, at least into the new Shield, that maybe aren't that trustworthy and have really, you know, effed up in the past. And, you know, I mean, the one guy, the British guy that shot that, well, he didn't kill them, but I mean, he shot them with tranquilizers and tried to make his own rules, so to speak.
Right.
They brought him in spite of the fact that half the team wants to take his head off. And I like the way that they're getting their come up. He's getting his comeuppance.
Yeah.
Along the way.
So knowing that you're caught up, Tim, are we missing everything on what we're saying about these characters, or does it seem to be playing along?
It is agony not being able to talk about the new episodes. You guys have got to get caught up.
This week I will be.
No, you're not wrong about some things, and then there are other things. Like when you talk about Ward, he's definitely got a long road to mm-hmm. go to earn anybody's trust. But I think one of the things that, to me, it seems obvious that Ward has got to have some kind of redemption arc. It's a really hard thing to imagine because what he did was terrible, you know. And I went back and rewatched season one. When you get to the end of the season, it reminded me, oh my God, yeah, no, he really was bad, you know. Mm-hmm. Like you kind of forget about these things. One of the things that I found with this show is that oftentimes I think I know where it's going, and I'm actually pretty good at knowing where shows are going, like guessing stuff before mm-hmm. it happens. This show has proved me wrong many times, especially in larger story arc concerns. So while it seems obvious to me that Ward is aimed for a redemption arc, I don't know that that's where they're going to go or if it's going to go where we think. My thought.
Since we're not really fully caught up yet, and Tim, I can promise you I will be, and next week you will be able to talk about everything.
Yes, I will be too.
I feel so guilty. Like I need to spend this weekend and just watch the entire season one and work my way through season two. You guys are getting me all excited.
I'm telling you, it
is worth it. Eventually, it gets very, very worth it. Like Tim said, it's a bit of a slog to get through the first half of the first season, but about the time that it starts syncing up with the Thor 2 movie,
oh yeah, that too.
Then,
yes.
then mm-hmm. especially when it hits the Captain America 2. That's when they really work.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a symbiotic relationship. They drive each other, and it really, if you're a big fan of Winter Soldier, then I think you're really going to love the last few episodes of season one. And this season, I have no complaints at all this season.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. That's what I would say is like, and from one Marvel zombie to another, you know, I'll say that the biggest disappointment for you will most likely be the lack of recognizable Marvel signifiers in the first chunk of the show.
Yep.
They keep encountering things that, okay, you know, that could have been a Skrull artifact, but instead it's something else. You know what I mean? And you might get a little frustrated that it doesn't have a lot of overt linkage to the Marvel universe. But
and that's what I've been scared of. That's kind of what's driven me away so far.
Yeah.
Like Eric's mentioned before, and that's really been what's kind of, you know, the magnetic force between me watching it.
Yeah. Well, yeah, you don't want it to waste your time, you know. I mean, but I will also say it's not just an empty promotional vehicle. And it really enriched my enjoyment of Winter Soldier, having kind of gotten this insight into the day-to-day life of the top SHIELD team, you know.
Yeah.
And then the things that happen in Winter Soldier, how they impact these characters is really profound then. And, the synergy really works for me. So I think if you got some time to put in a marathon and you don't have anything, like any TV show commitments beaten down your door, you can't lose. I would say just do it.
Especially, here's the cool part, is watch the first part and then watch the Thor Dark World, then watch it where it picks up after Thor, then watch Captain America Winter Soldier, and then watch...
Yeah. Watch the movies in sequence, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
And it really fits in great.
Okay.
Yeah.
No, that's a really good idea.
I'll tell you what, they did it right.
We haven't seen any of the Avengers show up yet, but I know that's going to change. We have seen Nick Fury. He's appeared in a couple of episodes. And Lady Sif, who was in Thor 2, was in an episode, and she was pretty cool. She had some great fight scenes. And
that's a fun episode.
Yeah, it is. Robert Downey Jr. has publicly said that he would like to do a cameo or a guest shot on Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D.,
really?
Which really shocked me. Yeah.
Yeah, I saw that.
Robert Downey Jr., like, I need to be paid mega millions, is willing to go on a TV show.
Yeah, because he wants to be part of Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. Well, see, I think the other way, he does want to be paid mega millions of dollars, but he has fallen in love with the Marvel Universe. And I think anything Marvel, he's really, I don't know, I wouldn't say volunteer his time because we all know that's not true. But he has actually turned towards, he's a big supporter of Marvel. Sure, he tried to renegotiate a contract for a new Iron Man, but still, I think he's a supporter of Marvel. And that'd be great if he did make it on Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. But they are bringing Mockingbird into the show sometime. Don't know when yet. And it might be in one of these two episodes we're missing, but Tim won't tell us.
Oh, won't I? Watch the show, dudes.
Oh, God.
Actually, I don't know anything about Mockingbird being in the show yet. So.
Oh, okay, so not yet.
I posted a link on the Nerd Up Facebook page. Next week, on Tuesday night during Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., they're going to be premiering the new Age of Ultron trailer. But it got leaked today.
Yes, it did.
Early on comicbookmovie.com. And I just checked it out before the show, and my God, yes, the link is on the Facebook page. Check it out. It's as far as I know, I look for it on Facebook because I wanted to see the high def version, but apparently comicbookmovie.com is the one that has it right now, and it's just the standard definition version, but it's so good.
Can we pause this so I can go watch it right now?
No,
you're definitely killing me because. You're totally killing me because we killed our cable because we're like, screw it, you know, we'll Hulu everything. There's nothing really obsessing over. And now I'm just like, I feel like I need cable again because with Constantine coming out and then apparently Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. is just epic. Mm-hmm. I'm just like, maybe I need cable again and not to wait for it to come out on Hulu. You guys are kicking me in the butt.
Yeah, you don't want to listen to us if you gave up cable. We even got Tim Coker to watch TV again.
I will just say three or four things about the trailer. One, Quicksilver. Mm-hmm. Two, Scarlet Witch. And three, the Hulkbuster armor.
Oh, yeah.
Awesome. Oh, well, yeah, I'm all excited now. I feel like I need to be open to my computer. Well, what's up?
Well, now, Eric, after you just said that, I need a cigarette.
Now, Eric, didn't you say you had four things to say?
Oh, I did. I think it was just three. There were other things, but everything. It happened so fast that those were the things that I walked away with. It's like, oh, I know who that is. I know who that is. Oh, that's the Hulkbuster armor.
Nice.
Oh, he's having a nerdgasm. I am.
And of course, James Spader's voice is all over it, and he's just freaking awesome as Ultron. I can't wait for this movie.
Cool.
I love James Spader. I had no idea he was in it.
Oh, yeah, he's the voice of Ultron.
Mm-hmm.
All right.
James Spader's kind of amazing.
All right, well, let's move on to another comic book-based TV series. Now, this one, we'll see what happens here. But I'll start out with a fun one. The Flash. Tim Coker, you're watching it, correct?
I am.
And Eric, are you watching The Flash?
I am not.
And Miss Cableless is not watching The Flash, I'm sure.
Clearly, I'm a failure. I feel like I need to be ordering cable tomorrow morning.
Well, you will be after this podcast, I'm sure. Tim and I are going to rule this one, and you guys are just going to be in awe because The Flash is turning out to be pretty darn good. It's amazing that I was hoping, and I was being the optimist, you guys know I am, that, you know, they're going to make it the fun series like The Flash comics are, and they did. They made it the fun comic. They've incorporated all the continuity. You get your regular Flash from the comic books, and they're actually incorporating the actual city names and stuff like that. So that's one thing that bothered me about Arrow. Where Arrow, they kind of created their own based on, you know, almost as bad as not bad, because it actually is a good show.
Smallville.
Yeah, more like, I was going to say almost as bad as Smallville. Actually, I was going to go as far as say almost as bad as Lawnmower Man, as we try to bring that one up. But no, they're actually paying attention to the comic books, and they're not afraid. They've got the flashy red costume with the gold lightning bolt. They even, I love the fact that they brought, what's his name? John Wesley Shipp. Yeah, the guy that played The Flash in the 90s TV series, he is Barry Allen's dad in this one. And it is so cool that they did that nod, and they're continuing with it. And they keep dropping hints of, is it the Anti-Flash? Is that his name? The Yellow Flash?
Professor Zoom?
Mr. Zoom, that's it. Mr. Zoom, reverse, they're even making hints about him. So there's all sorts of things going on with this that they're really, and they're totally tying in legitimate villains that are from the comic, you know, like Multiplex was the last one I saw. But yeah, they're actually they're not just making up their own villains and saying, oh, this is Mr. Strongman, you know. It's a multiplex. Yeah. Oh, he was in the comic. And actually what they did is they mention a name, and I sit there with my laptop. They'll mention the guy's name, and I'm like, okay, yeah, that's a familiar name, and then I'll Google it, and sure enough, that's the, you know, that's the actual, the alter ego of that villain. Yeah. Yeah, the Flash, they're doing good. What's your opinion, Tim?
Oh, honestly, I am very pleasantly surprised. Like, the thing, you know, I'm mainly a Marvel guy now, but it wasn't always this way. When I was a kid, I liked Marvel and DC pretty much equally. Maybe gave Marvel a little bit of an edge, but I go off on Marvel, or on DC's TV and movie properties a lot on this show, because there's always this kind of constipated sense of self-seriousness about it. And I really feel like that they're deeply ashamed of and embarrassed by the source material a lot of the time, and they refuse to engage with it, you know? And what I really am enjoying about, so what I like about this show is that it's a really pleasant surprise, because they actually seem to be more confident about embracing the source material and not trying to be kind of an adolescent idea of what is cool and badass, you know what I mean? And that's nothing against Batman. Everybody likes Batman. He's great. But I'm so tired of everything having to be put in a color palette that looks good next to Batman, because Batman's the only one they care about. And so Flash, I love it. I think that, you know, he's got the red suit. He's got a sense of humor. He's not a tortured vigilante. He's not a person who is acting possibly from revenge, you know.
Right.
He's not somebody who's dwelling on how he was wronged and what his beef is. He's doing what he's doing because it's the right thing to do. And I can't believe I'm seeing a DC property who's actually allowed to do something because it's the right thing to do and overtly embrace that. That, you know, that's one of the things I love about Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. is you could say it's hokey, but what I love about it is that it's a very positive show. Mm-hmm. And it's a show where doing the right thing is important. And so it's nice to not have a show that's not about a character who's being forced, you know, to stumble blind through a nightmarish netherworld of personal compromise, disappointment, and malaise, you know.
Well, one of the things about that is they even came out right out and said it. I mean, that was one of Barry Allen's lines. They said something about, you're not going to go out chasing superheroes, you're not a cop, and he goes, it's the right thing to do. Who else is going to be able to do it, you know? And it's like, you know, that's, they killed my mother. It's like, you know, you gotta go with it, and that's what makes comic books, and the Flash is doing that. You're right, absolutely right. I guess they're doing it right. Which brings me to the next one, is Arrow. Now, I know, Tim, you said at one point you tried to watch it, but and I agree with you, they did the whole, you know, let's be like Batman, dark, revenge, all that good stuff. However, this season, they're turning that around. This season, I think what it is that they saw that people are tired of the darkness, you know, because this season they've started making things a little more light. They've also done the thing with, one of the things that bugged me about it is that the city was Starling City. In the comics, it's Star City. Come on, there's a reason behind these comic book names. Metropolis, Gotham, Star City, Central City, Coast City, whatever, you know. They have simple names because that's fun. Well, Starling City, they're actually going to be renaming it to Star City. I was like, cool. Plus, they got, what's his, Brandon Routh, is that his name?
Yeah
the guy Superman. From the last Superman.
Yeah, he's now the CEO of Queen Industries, which is, you know, Oliver Queen's, Arrow's company, but he's Superman. So, okay, he's not playing Superman, but he's still, it's like, it's good to have that face. I liked him when he's in the TV series Chuck. In fact, I liked every once in a while Chuck would say, you know, Superman looking guy, you know. But anyway, I love that he's in here, because he's he likes to poke fun at himself, but at the same time, he's quirky. There we go. He can pull off a quirky role like that. And that's what he's doing in this. There's times when you think, oh my gosh, he's just trying to take over the company, but then he's got a heart. And so, but anyway, Brandon Routh is pulling it off on this. There's several other things. They had Black Canary. In the comic books, it was Green Arrow's girlfriend, and I can't remember names right now, darn it. But anyway, in the TV show, it's Green Arrow's girlfriend's sister, who is also his girlfriend. It's like, what? That really got confusing. Well, now they killed the original Black Canary, or that Black Canary off. And now it looks like the sister, the one that actually in the comic books has the role of Black Canary, is going to be taking on the black mask and fishnet hose and everything. It's looking like they're steering back towards more comic book continuity on this season.
Because a lot of people were pissed they weren't there.
Could be. Maybe they're just kind of getting the memo, like, that you don't have to pretend that you don't like the material. You can actually have fun with it, you know, and I think it's cool. But, you know, I got to say about the idea of Laurel becoming Black Canary, one thing about this show is you really get the feeling that it only takes maybe a couple, 2-3 months to become a super incredible badass fighter. Because, like, the reveal of in last week's episode, of at the very end of the episode, you know what I'm talking about. You know, it's like, wait, okay, how did she really learn how to do that in this short amount of time? You know, so the idea of Laurel, the assistant district attorney, you know, alcoholic person, like suddenly becoming a lethal instrument of justice, you know, I'm sure they're gonna do it, but I don't know if I'm in a box.
I know what you mean. at least her
have a good backstory for it, kind of like, you know, at least with Buffy, she was a gymnast, okay, that makes sense that she's physically fit, like have a good backstory.
Sister, she had that training, 5-year training, like Oliver Queen had on the TV show. Anyway, but yeah, you're absolutely right. It's like okay, all of a sudden, here's the mask.
Have a backstory. Even just tell me she did martial arts since she was a child. Tell me something that makes it believable that her body's physically capable of this.
Mm-hmm. And as to the alcoholism, Tony Stark was an alcoholic, so.
That's true.
Hey, but if Batman can heal his broken back in a matter of weeks, then pretty much all sets are off.
Okay. What am I saying?
But I think what it is they do, they're like, okay, we need to get this back on comic book continuity, even though comic book continuity is kind of almost a joke in itself. But I think they're trying to, and it's like, I like the idea that they're trying to. But yeah, like you said, how can she just put on the mask and all of a sudden become, and all that other, and all the other good stuff. So it looks like they're going that way. Maybe they will. We'll see.
I appreciate it.
Yeah. And hopefully they'll be able to explain that. All right, let's move on to another DC property. See, there's not enough Marvel on TV, unless you want to count all the cool cartoons, but we won't talk about those. I love them. But anyway, the other DC that's really, I'm still not sure where I stand on it, so I'm going to let you guys run with it, and we'll start with Eric on this one. Gotham.
Well, I like it. It's not perfect. It's got some kind of glaring problems, but they're not deal breakers for me. And the good stuff to me kind of outweighs the bad stuff. I really like Jim Gordon. I like that actor, and I don't know. He's intriguing to me, and he's just got one of those faces that I like watching this guy. And I'm concerned about what's going to happen to him, and what his character path is going to be. Jada Pinkett sometimes. Sometimes she's interesting, but she just seems to be trying too hard.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
If that makes any sense. Yeah, it just doesn't, I'm just not buying it completely, but maybe the shoes will stretch to fit her, I don't know.
It's been a while since she's been in anything. I think she probably has to try pretty hard.
Yeah, that's true.
Even
I don't remember
Smith
seeing
only
her
gets
name.
You so far.
Yeah.
But it's the smaller characters right now that I find really interesting. I mean, I love the actor that's playing the Penguin.
Oh yeah.
He's very, very good in the part, and I don't think that they could find anyone who looks more psychotic than this guy. Of course, I'm sure part of that's the makeup. But I mean, this guy is really just like he is the very definition of unpredictable. I have no idea what he's going to do at any given time. Mm-hmm. And it depends on the circumstance and what is going to serve him best that will dictate what he will do at any given time. He may do something that results in crime being stopped or someone being arrested in a good way, but of course it serves him, his purpose to do so at the time. But he's also a bloodthirsty psychopath that'll kill you as quickly as looking at you.
Just for a sandwich.
Just for a sandwich, yeah. I said this before, I really love the sets and the way that the show is shot. I think it's probably one of the most cinematic shows on television right now. I don't know how, that's not going to carry the show through to the end, but like I said, there are other things that I really like about it. I'm hoping that the writing will get a little more even-handed as it goes along, and there are characters that I don't like. I don't like Gordon's girlfriend and the whole subplot with her and her previous lesbian lover who's trying to bring down Gordon. It's just
don't forget the joint. Don't forget her smoking a joint and her little sexy
yeah.
dad.
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. It's like, you're the police.
Poor Barbara Gordon.
Yeah. You're the future police commissioner's wife. Or, well, I guess future wife, too. So that one.
Yeah, I could do without that.
That seems like a part that just, like, last minute they thought of. Oh, yeah, we forgot about Barbara Gordon. Well, throw her in as a lesbian junkie. I don't know. But
she's the producer's daughter.
Yeah. Yeah. Really, I think that you're absolutely right. That role needs some help. So, all right, Tim Coker, without using the words Jada Pinkett, let's hear what you have to say.
No,
go ahead. What you got, Tim?
You're misrepresenting me is all I'm saying. No, she, okay, here's what I'll say about her is I don't have any negative opinion of her as an actress. I haven't seen her in a whole lot, but I don't think she's bad in the show. This is the thing about this show that I'm trying to figure out, because almost nothing about it corresponds with what I consider to be good TV. There are things in it that I like, but I watch the show, and I got to say, it's not dull. It's crazy, but I wouldn't actually say that it's good. But I don't know. Eric, you remember that movie House of Games?
Yeah,
David Mamet movie?
I actually love it.
Yeah, I know. And I saw the movie, and, you know, that was one of those movies that everybody loved, and I watched it, and I just couldn't believe it. It was like Silence of the Lambs, where I just thought, what? This movie is terrible, you know? And I remember going off on it.
I'm not going to bet on you.
That's a line from the movie, right?
Yeah.
Okay. But see, to me, the movie was just hilariously bad, like terrible in every way, and incompetent and pretentious and artsy in, like, just, I thought it was terrible. But you really had a lot of faith in it, Eric, and you kept saying it's not bad, it's stylized.
Yeah.
You know, you kept saying it's stylized, and I thought, it's stylized bad, you know? Like, so that's the thing about Gotham. Is this something I just don't get? But I feel like, you know, there are good pieces in it. Like the kid who plays Bruce Wayne, he's really good. And I find myself getting interested in how he's, you know, becoming the little detective and stuff, just mainly because the actor is so good, you know, but so much of it just feels off to me. And I can't really figure out what kind of show it wants to be. And I've heard that a lot, you know, people saying, oh, you know, it can't decide whether it's a police procedural or a crazy superhero show. And I don't really want it to belong to any genre. I'd rather it just be a good show. But I just feel like it's all over the place. You know, it's a real mess. And I feel like they are halfway to an interesting show, but I'm wondering if they have the artistic grit to pull it across the finish line and make it great, or if it's just going to end up a mess.
I think you're right that it is the show is trying to decide what it wants to be. And I think that there's at least three or four directions that the writers, I think, are trying to take it in that, you know, I think only one or two of those is ever going to really work. They can't be all things to all people, and they're really going to have to, you know, make a decision at some point of what they want this show to be. But I'm willing to be patient with it at this point because I find it entertaining. And also, I don't know if we've mentioned this before, but of course, Alfred is played by Sean Pertwee. Mm-hmm. Who is the son of Doctor Who, John Pertwee. And I like that actor a lot. And he's certainly not who I would have thought of to play Alfred. But I'm enjoying his character.
Now, I will say this, guys. I was optimistic about it, thinking that Gotham was going to be, you know, the DC movie version of Marvel's Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., where it's going to tie in. Well, DC announced their movie plans for the next, about 5-6 years, and they said they will not tie in at all with any of the TV products. I was like, well, there goes my theory. So I don't know what they're going to do with it, but that came right out. That's one of the first things. It will not tie in with any of the TV shows. But they do have some good movies coming out. I mean, after all, I can't wait to see Shazam. So that's the one I like. So
are you being sarcastic? Or
No, seriously. That's the one. Especially, I mean, I can't. At first, I was like, The Rock as Black Adam? Okay, maybe.
Oh, yeah.
And it's like, yeah. And then they showed a picture. I think it was a Photoshopped thing or something, or something Dwayne Johnson actually released. But it showed him with the Black Adam haircut style thing and in costume. And it was like, okay, yeah, I can see that. But, yeah, I'm thinking DC movies, they got a plan, but they don't include the TV. And that's where I kind of – that's why I'm faltering on Gotham right now, is that it's like at first I thought if they tie that in with the movies, that'll be so awesome. But now as I watch it, it's like there's good points and bad points. But I'm with you, Eric, on it's just the way they shot it, the scenery, everything, set decoration itself is a worth watching it. And I'm with you, Tim, on the fact that the guy playing Bruce Wayne is just phenomenal. I'm thinking, how does that kid do that?
So, yeah, he's a find.
Yeah, yeah. And
he was actually in the show Touch, which only lasted 2 seasons on Fox. With Kiefer Sutherland. I'm a big Kiefer fan, so I watched that. Ah. And he played Kiefer's autistic son, and he was very, very good in that. He's grown quite a bit since then, but that was who he was.
I remember that show.
Now that you say that, I remember his face from, wow, he is a good actor. Well, the other thing I thought, back to the Penguin, one final note here. I thought it's great. The guy's a survivor. I mean, after all, Jim Gordon pushed him into the river, he swam, and then also he got his neck, his throat cut and bled. Oh, wait, that was Walking Dead. Never mind. So, the same actor was in Walking Dead and they flew him in just for one little scene where he got his throat cut and bled. Wow, there's some clout there.
So, yeah, we got to talk about Walking Dead, don't we?
Yeah, oh, yeah. In fact, well, yeah, let's talk about Walking Dead. That's a comic book TV series.
Yeah, it is.
And actually,
it is. Cool.
This season, they're tying in. I saw an interview with Robert Kirkland and someone else, Greg Nicotero. And they're weaving in and out of the comic book world of The Walking Dead, whereas a couple of seasons they went way away from the comic books and it's like had its own thing going.
Yes.
But now they're actually working in some of the comic book stories, and like right now with the priest that they've befriended sort of, and that's from the comic book. And one of the things I heard coming up, one of the most, like I said before in a previous podcast, the guy that's going to make the governor look like a pussycat. Guy named Negan is supposed to be making an appearance this season. So,
if you can make the governor look like a pussycat, you're a hard ass.
I know.
Have they announced who's going to be playing the part yet? Because I know that there was rumor that Fett from
that's what the same
from
rumor.
The Strain.
The guy from The Strain. Yeah. Fett.
And I like that actor. I really like the character that he's played on The Strain. That's not how I pictured him exactly when I read the book.
Yeah.
But he's impressed me. I like it. I like the way he's playing that character.
Yeah. In fact, actually, I kind of figured when reading the book, Fett was a kind of an overweight kind of guy. But no, this guy's fit and ready to battle vampires. But yeah, that's what I heard, is that the same actor was going to be playing Negan in the Walking Dead TV show. But that could be just one of those rumors, and maybe he just wants to do it too. But yeah.
One of those rumors that you really want to be true.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. And because I think this guy would rock it. He's got the look too of Negan.
He's a big ass mofo.
Yeah. And anyway, yeah, so the season of Walking Dead so far, let's see, what do they got? They've got back together. They were rescued from cannibals. And
by Carol.
Yeah, by Carol.
Single-handedly.
Yes. And I like that. We want to thank you. You don't owe me nothing. You just saved our lives. And she played it off like there's no big deal. It's like, whatever. You just blew up half the compound there.
But I love the way that Rick put it to her in the last episode, that he didn't say, you know, oh, you can join our group again. He asked us, can we join you?
Yeah, yeah. And that was nice.
I would like to see, I mean, I don't want to see like a battle for control of the group. I think Rick is always going to be their leader. But I would like to see Carol assert her authority and maybe, you know, and do some more of the badass kickassery that we saw in the first episode.
Yeah.
Hopefully some more down the road. But I've always loved Carol, and you know, there's every character kind of has their own philosophy, and I tend to lean more towards Carol's, even though it's a little grim, and she's definitely a fatalist at heart, I think. You know, and she believes in arming children and not coddling to them and, you know, teaching them how to kill and at an early age. And I was like, yes, in this world, that's what you have to do.
Yeah, I don't consider that to be a fatalist. I consider that to be a realist at the highest level. I mean, the reality of their life is children need to know how to fight, and children are going to die. Children are going to slow you down.
Carol will make those decisions that Rick, at least at this point in time, is not ready to make, like what got her kicked out of the group in the first place. And I'm not sure that she maybe didn't go too far, but I think her head was in the right place, that they're all living in these closed quarters and there's this virus that they have no cure for that's killing people left and right. You know, they have a typhoid Mary in the middle of their encampment. I don't know. She made a tough call, but, you know, she's the only one that was willing to make that call.
Well, not to mention the darkest episode of Walking Dead ever, where she had to shoot a little girl in the back of the head.
Yeah.
You know,
no one else could have done
that. No.
I think Carol's really great because Rick's been needing to make those calls, and I mean, from the first season, and the fact that he has got people killed. It's gotten adults killed. It's got children killed. It's gotten adults killed trying to find children, such as Sophia from season two. Uh-huh. And it's just kind of, you know, there's a point where you have to cut your losses, and Rick's not really capable of doing that. I think the fact that Carol is and really asserts that ability is great. I think she's got better leadership material. I love Rick for his level-headedness, but Carol's willingness to get it done, no mm-hmm. matter how uncomfortable it is, because it's what has to be done. I really like how she's willing to make those choices, and I like how she's a woman who can make those choices.
Ah, yeah, okay, now we see the real reason.
She's
the
war
chief, to be the ones,
you know?
Like that couldn't kill a kid if we had to.
Yeah.
But well, I like... There are women that can do that.
In the comic books, Rick is a lot more level-headed than he is in the TV. They've kind of wimped him out a little bit in the TV series, but they do it in a right good way.
I was going to say pussified.
Well,
he's learning, though. Every season he gets a little more callous and a little more quick on the draw and making the decisions that he needs to make. But
look at
the costs to him that it's.
But he was also the one that came up with the three questions, which I think were perfect, especially when he asked the Reverend in the latest episode where, you know, as soon as he asked that first one, how many walkers have you killed? And we're all in the rest of us in the house are going, how many people? Why? You know, because we know those questions. But he came up with those, so that's definitely three good questions to find out whether somebody's going to be in your group.
Now, I know it's not going to happen because, of course, this priest is going to, or the preacher, or whatever he is, he's Episcopal, so I guess he's a minister, not a priest.
Okay,
but he wears the collar, you know.
Yeah.
But I, you know, as soon as I saw this guy after like 5 minutes, I was like, okay, you guys need to get the hell as far away from this guy as you can. I mean, and Rick's already told him, it's like if whatever you're hiding causes the death of anyone in my, you know, what he calls his family, mm-hmm. he goes, I'll kill you. Mm-hmm. Well, it's going to happen. I can already tell you nothing good is going to come from this guy. And they should just get on the road to Washington and leave that guy in his church and get on the road. But it ain't going to happen. Something terrible is going to happen that's going to be based around this guy.
You don't know how bad I am itching right now to tell you the spoiler from the comics.
No. I don't want to hear it.
Well, first of all, let me put it this way. The trip to Washington.
Okay. Well,
I kind of already thought that.
Yeah.
The trip to Washington. There we go.
Yes, I know that.
Wait till that's revealed.
Get there before they all find out or not. But
yeah.
But of course, something bad has already happened. Mm-hmm. At the end of the last episode, Bob, who I've kind of always known was going to be Zombie Chow at some point. Well, it turns out he's not being Zombie Chow. He's being Termite Chow.
Yeah.
And in the most horrific way possible, they're cutting limbs off while he's still alive and while he's still conscious to know that they've. You know, he's waking up to find limbs missing, which is a little nod to the abominable Dr. Fibes, if anyone remembers that Vincent Price movie. And here's the thing is, I don't know this for a fact, but I'm pretty sure I know what's going on here. He leaves the church and starts crying after he's, you know, basically, you know, the one more thing where he's kissing Tyrese's sister, I forgot her name.
Mm-hmm.
And then he leaves the church and breaks out in tears. I was like, okay, what's going on here? And then I was like, did he get bit while they were having that little, problem in the slime down underneath that the storehouse? And then of course he gets kidnapped by the termites and they're chowing down on him. And I was like, aha!
Well, let me tell you, each one of your questions. You ever get to that point where it's like you just want to burst out and say something out loud, and then every time something happens, you want to do it even more, and then more? Each one of your questions you're asking just makes me want to explode about this point. And I'm telling you, you're going to love. If they keep with the comic, which that's what they plan on doing with this story arc right now, mm-hmm. you're going to love it. I'll just put it that way.
Well, I saw in a preview, like, before the first episode even aired, that there were scenes, or no, it was after the first episode aired, there were scenes where Gareth, who was one of the main termites,
mm-hmm.
I saw him in one of the previews after the first episode. So I knew he didn't die in the warehouse, and of course Rick was right. They should have gone back and killed everyone, because now it's going to come back and haunt them. And I also read online that these guys have become what is in the comics are called the Hunters. This is a different origin story, I guess, than what was in the comics. Yeah. But this is how they're merging and cutting away. But it sounds rather elegant the way that they're doing it, and it feels right. But it's kind of cool that they've got this group of cannibals now that's going to be hunting them for revenge and for food, and it's all based off of the season cliffhanger and the season opener.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm so far on board on Walking Dead. I'm
very on board.
Yeah, well, I can tell you real quick that. That last scene where they panned out and they show his leg missing and they show the others eating, that's an almost exact duplicate of the comic frame from the comic book. So they're doing a real good story on that one.
We were having some barbecue.
Yeah, barbecue. Yeah, exactly. So
have you guys seen that meme they created with that too? It says, "I'm barbecued," and it's got his head on a skewer.
No.
Oh my God. Okay. I'm going to be pulling that up and sending that to the Facebook page because it'll crack you up. I saw that and I rolled.
You know what? The Walking Dead's created so many cool memes. My favorite one so far still is the picture of, can't think of the girl's name that they had to shoot in the back of the head, but picture of her said, "Need a babysitter? Call me."
Lizzie? Is that her name, Lizzie?
Lizzie, that's it, yeah. That's my favorite meme so far. But all right, well. Anything further you want to say other than Walking Dead's doing a good job?
It's definitely winning.
And you know what? If it weren't for The Walking Dead, I wonder where Chris Hardwick would be today.
You know, actually, now that you bring that up, Chris Hardwick is an interesting story. I'm like, how did this guy get to this point? I mean, he was a stand-up comedian, he really wasn't that famous as a stand-up comedian.
Right.
But he started this website, The Nerdist, and started a podcast.
Mm-hmm.
Interestingly enough, and from this he's been asked to host, you know, the Talking Dead.
Mm-hmm.
He had the post show for Breaking Bad,
and then At Midnight.
He's like the go-to person for anything Doctor Who related.
Mm-hmm.
The BBC America puts him on all the time. I mean, he is everywhere. I was like, what, you know, where's this guy's magic beans? I mean, how's he pulling all of this off?
Yeah. Well, it's called podcasting, and one of these days we'll be the next Chris Hardwicks.
Woohoo!
Yes, please.
Aspirations.
We have a favorite, well, it is my favorite holiday, Halloween, coming up. I grew up on a steady diet of horror films, and I still love them, even though it's rare that I actually find one that actually scares me at all and entertains me, but I still keep trying, and once in a while I'll find one that's pretty good. Like the last one that I saw that was probably noteworthy at all was The Conjuring, which I liked a lot.
Mm-hmm.
Every Halloween I try to go back and watch at least one or two of my favorite horror films, and earlier this week I went back to watch Phantasm, which I haven't watched for many years and has always been one of my favorite films. Just a brief quick review. If you haven't seen it, you should seek it out. It's one of the most bizarre, nightmarish. It's so original, and mm-hmm. it still is. Mm-hmm. I mean, there's not been anything that's come out since then that's anything like this. It's a hybrid between a horror film and a science fiction film because it involves aliens from another planet, but it's scary as hell, and it's just, it feels like you're in someone's nightmare. Now, this was Don Coscarelli's first film, as far as I know, at least his first feature film. And it kind of shows there's some inexperienced filmmaker mistakes that he makes. But a lot of those mistakes actually serve to make this feel more disjointed and more like a nightmare. Because as you know, when you're having a nightmare and you wake up and you think about it, a lot of it doesn't make sense. And you will jump from one location to another without any explanation. Well, there's a little bit of that going on here. Yeah, exactly.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a little bit of that going on here. But there's certain icons in the film. First of all is the tall man played by Angus Scrimm.
Yeah, I'm wanting to have Angus Scrimm's children, by the way. I've loved that show. Ever since I saw him there, I'm like, dude, we're cloning. Anyway, go ahead.
The man is amazing, and I mean, he's been, thank God he's gotten other roles along the way. If you watched Alias, he had a recurring role as like the lie detector / torturer guy for the bad spy agency that she worked for.
But he's Alias.
Yeah, he's popped up on some other shows as well, but he will always be the tall man for me. Mm-hmm. And he doesn't have many lines, but the lines he does have are very, very memorable.
Boy.
And you play a good game, boy. And of course, then there are the silver spears, which are the other main icon of the film, which are these little balls that fly around. They're like guard dogs or patrol. They patrol the mortuary and dispatch any guests that aren't supposed to be there by basically ramming themselves into your head, and then a drill comes out and drills into your forehead and basically exsanguinates you through a hole in your forehead.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So awesome.
Yes.
It is. It is so awesome. I love it. And, you know, I mean, this, I don't know how many times I've watched the film, but this is, it never loses its charm, and I love it as much, if not more, every time I watch it. Now, most films, I'm 99.9% of the time, I am staunchly against remakes. If Don Coscarelli himself were to be so inclined, I would like to see him remake this film because he's more experienced now. He's definitely could do a bigger budget, and I would really like to see what he does with this film. Now, there have been many sequels to Phantasm, and they've all been kind of terrible, honestly. I'm going to maybe try to watch one or two of them before Halloween, but if I don't get around to it, so be it. It's just they're nowhere near as good as the original.
Now, weren't there four total movies in the series, or is there five?
Yes, and there's okay. Four, but there's a fifth one that is just wrapped production, and it's supposed to be out in early 2015.
Oh, wow.
But it's produced by Coscarelli, but it's not directed by him, so my hopes aren't real high for it, but it's called Phantasm 5 Ravager.
Oh, wow. Okay.
And I
guarantee
back...
you the V in the Ravager will be capitalized to be the 5, like they did in Oblivion. The IV was 4.
Oh, sure. But they're bringing back Michael A. Baldwin and Reggie Bannister.
Wow.
Who played, the original stars from the first movie. I can't imagine what they look like nowadays. But,
older.
Quite a bit older. But it's kind of funny, if you see any pictures of Don Coscarelli, he doesn't look very old at all. And this made in 1979, so...
Well, you know what he did. He's been compacting these bodies, making youth juice for himself, see?
Uh-huh.
It's not fiction you're dealing with. This is a how-to.
It's a biography.
Yeah.
It's a biopic, yeah. But the bodies that they were, you know, basically scrunching down to send to the home planet as slave labor because of the extreme gravity and extreme heat, you know, however that works. But they were basically Jawas, weren't they?
I know, right? Yeah. Yeah, it's too bad they came out when Star Wars did, because everybody I know said, hey, they're Jawas. That's how Jawas are. Well, I can tell you, Eric, we were talking about the remakes. I can't remember. I think it might have been the third one, because I don't think it was the second one, but where they brought out the multiple balls where each one had a different function. That's the one I liked. I mean, the rest of the movie was kind of lame, silly, but the whole there's more than one purpose for these balls, I loved it. Hey, hey.
Really? Do you like balls with lots of functions?
Hey, hey.
So you like balls? That's okay.
Not that there's anything wrong with that.
No,
everybody
not.
Tune in for Gil Wilson and his multi-purpose balls.
Oh my gosh. If Billy Mays was alive, he'd be pushing my balls, let me tell you. But anyway, let's move on. Tim Coker.
Yeah, let's move on.
Tim Coker, you got a comic book you want to talk about?
I got a new comic today, and I'm all excited about it. I want to talk about it. And I don't know if it's just because I want to see the title, because it's got the best title ever for a comic, which is Giant Size Kung Fu Bible Stories.
I saw that, and I wanted to get it.
Yeah, it's I don't, just, you know, so you know what you're getting into. I don't think that there are actually Kung Fu Bible Stories in it. I just think it's a long title.
Aww.
I know, right?
I was really hoping there would be.
I can see, seriously, like, Moses and the Pharaoh.
Yeah, dude, I was imagining Jonah Kung Fu kicking his way out of a whale. Like, boom, and then the other side, the next frame are like, busted out ribs and whale side, and Jonah's emerging, like holding a piece of the heart and bop into it. Ah, you know. Really,
or David going all Jackie Chan on Goliath.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, Tim, now that you shot that part down, what do you got? What is this?
Well, now I'm going to confront you with the disappointing reality of what is actually a fantastic comic. I think it's a one-shot. I can't imagine that there will be a lot of them, but it's a large, it's tabloid size. It's an Image comic station. It says special collector's issue, and the entire thing, the trade dress of editor thing, is designed to look like these old John Comics Treasury editions that Marvel used to sell.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
In the 1970s. Remember those?
Yeah.
Yeah, I've got some of them.
You know, so it really, like, the nostalgia string for that. But even if you're not nostalgic, what it is, a collection of work by just world-class artists. So you've got, and it's fun stuff. It's crazy. The first is by Bruce Timm. If you don't know him, he's the genius behind Batman the Animated Series, and he's the creator of Harley Quinn. He's just done all kinds of amazing stuff, and he's kind of the brain behind the DC animated world. And Adam Warren, Empowered, you've got full story by him. You've got Tom Scioli, who does these great kind of Kirby-inspired stories. Ryan Otley, artist of Invincible. Eric Larson, who was creator of Seven. And actually, a series of beautiful black and white full-page pinups by Arthur Adams of various kind of fantasy ladies. And the whole thing is just a ton of fun. It's big, it's beautiful. The art is by absolute, like, world champion creators. And all of them are entering into the spirit of just making these crazy, big, wild stories. And anytime you can see this many incredibly talented people all come together in a way that you would never see, it just makes it kind of a special occasion if you're a fan of comic art. So I really, really strongly recommend it. Bruce Timm, for instance, almost never does comic books because it's so consuming and he's so with TV. Anytime he does a story, it's worth it. But his whole thing is a massive ad magazine of intercompany crossover events in comics. Just hilarious. So I just really want you guys to check this out. It's about $20. Not cheap, but it's beautiful. And sometimes, and I don't know if it's because it's big and so it's the same size in my hands that comics for a kid. But when I get a book like this and it's so full of beautiful art, like Wednesday Comics that DC did a few years ago, I just fall in love because I feel like I can fall into it, you know,
right.
And the art is gorgeous, so very strongly recommended.
Okay, well, while we may not see the Moses and the Pharaoh with these staffs and a bunch of people in a circle, that's the way I pictured it anyway. Well, we might not see that, but I'm liking the way what you're describing here. This might be kind of cool anyway. Had to give it a catchy name.
That's definitely attention grabbing, but I will say, my boyfriend is pretty good at drawing and pretty well-versed at comics stylized. So if we want to invent our own comic of Bible stories just kicking ass, I think we should really consider it.
We may have an idea. What was that again, Tim?
I think so.
What was that,
there
Tim?
There has to be a market for it.
Yeah, there has to be. There has to be. And,
there has to be a market for it.
Yeah, I think you're right.
There definitely are. There's a huge market for it. I can't imagine there not being one.
If there's a room for adolescent radioactive kung fu hamsters and Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, there's a market for these.
Mate, let's make Bible stories cool again.
Except I want to go with the Book of Mormon. We'll start with that one. So.
Oh, my God, that was so funny.
I want to see that so bad. But anyway, I've been revisiting some Sherlock Holmes. How's that for nerdiness? On audiobook.
We've been revisiting it.
No, not the TV series. I've been listening to audiobooks. And I've got the Adventures of Sherlock Holmes publication on audiobook. And I'll tell you what, you appreciate the TV series even more when you listen to the original stories. One of the things, like,
they do a great job with the references.
Yeah. And one of the things that, you know, Holmes is well known for, you know, they've kind of portrayed him as like this borderline Asperger type guy that, you know, pays attention to detail and has no social function at all. But one of the things that in the book, they sit there and you know, that they'll tell it, he solves the crime, and then they'll say, how'd you do that? And then he'll list all the things that he saw. Well, in the TV series, I like that fact, whereas they almost kind of like did like CSI, and they zoomed in on every little detail and which he was looking at the moment. And then you knew ahead of time before he explained it to Alda Watson. And, you know, but listening to the stories, you don't get that explanation till the end. And you're just like, wow, what's he doing? How do you figure that part out? You know, and then it explains it all at the end. So that's what I like about the books is that you're playing that guessing game with Watson. Unlike the TV show, they're showing it as it happens. But it still works out. The TV show is just phenomenal. But anyway, my latest nerd venture.
While we're on the topic of Martin Freeman and Benedict Cumberbatch, I just want to remind everybody again that today they did release the extended and HD version, though it's two more weeks till the Blu-ray, but the extended extra 20 some odd minutes of Desolation of Smog, and I'm pumped for that.
How many minutes extra?
I want to say it's like 26-ish, wow. Somewhere in the 20 something extra minutes. That's
wow,
that's a huge chunk.
Yeah, usually you'll hear with six extra minutes not seen in theaters, and like, oh, I got to have that. But now 26? What?
Yeah, I think I want to say 26 is the exact number, but I know it's up there. It's a pretty impressive amount. Blu-ray is not coming out for a couple more weeks still, but HD, and I mean, in this age, a lot of people go with that anyway, so I'm pretty excited.
Well, like I've told you guys, I have not watched any of the Hobbit movies. They're all gonna, I'm saving them for the end. I know I'm missing the big screen, blah, 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 blah.
You're not even gonna go, like, I just don't understand, because this is the third one. You could sit down the night before you go, or the day you go see Five Armies. At least go see the Battle of the Five Armies in theater. Mm. Like, sit down that morning, watch, you know, Unexpected Journey, and watch Desolation,
yeah.
And then go see Battle of the Five Armies. That way, I mean, that's going to be the most epic one anyway.
True, yep, true.
Good call.
Well, here's what I think is going to happen, and they've done this before. We have our, if you've listened to the podcast before, you heard me harp on how wonderful the Eagle Theater here is in Robinson. They did this with,
I love that theater.
They did, so I can't remember what the movie was now. I think it might have been the Harry Potter, but they had an all-day event where they showed all the Harry Potter movies back-to-back, and then they showed the new one at the, you know, at midnight.
I'm from Lawrenceville, so I
are you?
That Robinson Theater did that, yeah.
Oh, sweet. Neighbor.
Oh, hey, all right.
So I remember that Eagle Theater did that.
Yeah, and so I have this funny feeling, because Eric Gubelman, the owner of the place, is a nerd too. I have this funny feeling he will do some kind of marathon like that. And if he does that, I am so there, because that will be my chance to see it all in theater. Let's go ahead and bring an end to this conversation, an end to this podcast, and we'll see what happens next time around. But maybe Eric and I will be fully caught up, so we can all talk, you know.
Oh, I definitely will be.
Up to date. And then Tim won't have to feel like a spoiler.
Yeah, yeah.
So, and Brett, you're more than welcome to join us anytime. You passed your initiation.
Yes!
Except, wait, how many people have you killed?
Well, okay, I've killed 3 people, but one of them, you know, was kind of med revenge, but the other two totally justified. It was a self-defense thing.
Okay, you're in the group. Oh, you answered
right. But I've killed so many walkers, like, you have no idea.
All right, then. So, or what was the other questions we're supposed to ask Tim? What is your name? What
is your quest? What is your favorite color?
Green. No, blue.
Oh, purple.
All right, too many nerdness going on. All right, let's call an end to this Nerd Up podcast. Once again, you can reach me, Gil Wilson, at Gil Wilson on Twitter. Or if you want to just contact the Nerd Up podcast, you can also tweet at Nerd Up podcast.
You can reach me at Eric Bill, ericbill.
And you can reach me, Tim Coker, at Tim K Has To Say.
What about you, Brett?
I actually do have a Twitter. Oh, my goodness. I'm at don't judge me. Yeah, my Twitter handle, I never use it. But if you want to tweet me, I will start using it if y'all give me a reason to. It's at, and please, if you get this reference, we will immediately be best friends. My name is Brett Ashley, and my Twitter handle is at I Love a Matador, all one word. Lady Brett Ashley from The Sun Also Rises. Well, she wasn't engaged to a matador. She cheated on her fiance with a matador. Yeah, I told you, total nerd girl here. Anyway, come on.
Nice. Nice.
When you're a girl named Brett Ashley, you really have to embrace that Sun Also Rises.
You know, you got a point there.
Exactly. So I love a matador.
Nice. Okay, well, now people will be getting hold of you. You'll be flooded with the tweets, and you'll just not know what to do with yourself. Sure. But join us again next time. And in the meantime, stay nerdy.
Stay nerdy.
Dirty nerdy. Nerd Up Podcast.
www.gilwilson.com. If you need quality voice work for your radio commercials, audio for TV commercials, or maybe just for that message on hold for your business, you need to check out
www.gilwilson.com.
GILWILSON.com. www.gilwilson.com. Check it out. It's quirky. It's fun. It's innovative.